Today's audiocast for Monday, July 3rd, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Duffy Fainter, reporting for AvWeb's audio news service. Although they probably knock on wood at every opportunity, FAA officials have earned some bragging rights when it comes to decade-long focus on flight safety. It's now been almost 5 years since American Airlines Flight 587 went down in New York City, which the FAA sees as the last major airliner crash in the U.S. In 1997, not long after TWA Flight 800 exploded off Long Island and ValueJet 592 plowed into the Florida Everglades, Al Gore headed a White House commission that set the goal of reducing accidents by 80% over the next decade. According to a USA Today report, we've almost reached that goal. In fact, if you accept USA Today's methodology, your chances of being killed while flying on a domestic airliner within the US, Canada, Europe, or Japan in the past 5 years dropped to zero. According to the newspaper, the odds of dying in a plane crash are improving everywhere, even in developing countries, where 10 years ago you ran a 1 in 500,000 risk. That's now improved to 1 in 2 million. In fact, the flight portion of an airline trip is no longer considered the dangerous part. FAA officials privately suggest that they consider the greatest risk for the next major accident to be a runway incursion of some sort, and there have been some close calls in the last couple of years. It may be worth mentioning that the FAA and the Air Traffic Controllers Union have not recently appeared to be the best of friends, and sometimes messages are delivered to push a broader agenda. So, what effects will cost-cutting have? The FAA says it's trying to operate the national airspace system as a business, and it's therefore looking for efficiencies through consolidation and staff deployment. The New York Times last week reported that the agency intends to virtually freeze staff transfers between facilities, pare down the numbers of air traffic controllers in favor of better technology, and consider eliminating the staff meteorologist positions at the 20 en route facilities. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association says the changes will discourage the most experienced controllers from seeking the most challenging jobs, and cutting weather jobs may cost lives, union spokesman Kevin Bianchi told the Times. Whatever the future holds for the FAA and ATC, the immediate future will be brighter for the annual trek to Oshkosh and EAA's Air Venture. Here at AvWeb, the normal flow of incoming press releases has this week turned into the usual July deluge. As aviation begins preparations in earnest for the annual migration to Wisconsin and EAA Air Venture, we're getting ready too, with four special coverage issues. Watch for Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and again Monday deliveries, starting with Oshkosh opening day, July 24th. And expect three podcast features during AirVenture, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. While it's unlikely we'll see again the magnitude of accomplishment and innovation that was represented at last year's show through Spaceship One, Global Flyer, Honda Jet, Cessna's Mustang, and more, there's plenty of new stuff for patrons to see and do. Expect one center of this year's buzz to be Cessna's potential light sport aircraft entrant. For its part, EAA is maintaining a drive for safety and education. One significant threat to some general aviation pilots is the addition of ethanol to automotive fuels to stretch them and cut emissions. However, aircraft engines should never touch the stuff, and not all states require that gas pumps indicate the presence of ethanol in the fuel. In time for Oshkosh, EAA has introduced a simple and inexpensive kit that will detect ethanol in gasoline. Fortunately, some basic properties of gasoline, ethanol, and water make the alcohol easy to detect. Water and fuel are mixed in a graduated test tube and allowed to settle. If there's ethanol in the fuel, more water will be created by the mixing action, and the levels in EAA's test tube will not only alert the aircraft owner to the presence of ethanol, it will also show the percentage. The $15 kit is available now through EAA and will also be on sale at the show. AOPA is also taking on a battle inside engines. The association has written the FAA, asking that one section of a proposed airworthiness directive on Lycoming crankshafts be scrapped, since it will cost owners thousands of dollars and do nothing to increase safety. As we reported in June, the notice of proposed rulemaking would require owners of about 3,800 Lycoming 360 and 540 series engines to replace crankshafts at either the next scheduled overhaul, the next time the case is split, or at 12 years since date of manufacture or overhaul, regardless of the number of hours on the crank. AOPA's Luis Gutierrez says in the letter that even the FAA knows the 12-year deadline has no practical value. Gutierrez cites that the unsafe condition is unrelated to calendar time and that the crank removal at overhaul is sufficient to reduce the risk of failure to an acceptable level. AOPA is also working on Lycoming, which has set a deadline of 2009 for a special price on crankshaft kits for the affected engines. Swap out the crank before then, and Lycoming will supply the parts for $2,000. After that, the normal price of about $16,000 applies. Stay tuned. As the USI's Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, ADS-B, as an important tool in the modernization of the national airspace system, Australia is backing off on its own deployment program. Air Services Australia has canceled a request for proposals to equip 1,500 general aviation aircraft with the necessary gear to perform a real-life test of the system. The company says the plan was premature. Air Services' own consultation process has led the organization to conclude that some elements of the aviation industry and government need more time to consider the costs, timeframe, and implementation issues associated with the introduction of ADS-B technology in lieu of en route radars. ADS-B provides in-cockpit separation information for pilots, but the catch is that only aircraft equipped with the gear show up on the displays in other aircraft. It seems like money was one of the issues in cancellation of the program because of the level of subsidy that would be required to equip the 1,500 planes. Flooding has temporarily erased any complaints about a high spot on the runway at Bloomsburg Municipal Airport in Pennsylvania. Pilots last week were counting their lucky stars that the grading crews weren't as thorough as they might have been as aircraft huddled on the last patch of dry pavement during a week of heavy rain and widespread flooding. A stubborn low dumped a torrent of rain on the northeast, and the nearby Susquehanna River couldn't hold it all. 8 counties were declared a disaster area. There was no answer at the airport, and a NOTAM closing the airport was still in effect when we last looked. But the floodwaters were receding over the weekend, and cleanup has begun. The NTSB said Thursday that airliner fuel tanks are as flammable today as they were 10 years ago, as the 10th anniversary of the explosion of TWA Flight 800 off Long Island looms on July 17th. Note that the incident was not the first of its kind, and not the last. One event happened quite recently when a 727 lost a wing tank. And while an effective and relatively inexpensive by airliner standards system to prevent such catastrophes has been available for a couple of years and is newly upgraded, the FAA has yet to implement regulations requiring that airliners be less explosion prone. A notice of proposed rulemaking is on the table, but action to mandate any safety measure has not yet taken form. Back in D.C., there's still no word on what will happen to the FAA's heavily influenced bid to make the Washington Air Defense Identification Zone a permanent fixture. The sore spot was rubbed a little earlier this month when that NOTAM that enforces the long list of flight regulations was reissued. A couple of days after the NOTAM appeared on the FAA website, AOPA issued a news release claiming progress in the political battle against the controversial measure. AOPA says a high-ranking congressman on the Committee on Homeland Security has challenged the Department of Homeland Security to justify the flight regulations. AOPA is optimistic answers are forthcoming. And finally, a 14-year-old Inglewood, California boy is said to be the youngest African-American person to fly an international round trip in a helicopter. Jonathan Strickland landed a Robinson R-44 at Compton Airport in California on Saturday after completing a 15-hour return trip from Boundary Bay Airport in Delta, British Columbia. On his way to BC, he became the youngest African-American person to fly a helicopter solo and to do so internationally. According to an Associated Press story, while at Boundary Bay, he took a flight in a Cessna 172 and an R-22, and according to AP, became the youngest to solo both a helicopter and airplane on the same day. "It feels good," Strickland told AP, adding that anybody can do it. It just takes a lot of hard work. And once again, a reminder that AirVenture Oshkosh is less than 1 month away. AvWeb readers can expect expanded coverage, extra issues, more podcasts, and an updated AvWeb.com homepage. Watch this space as we work to make the most reliable and accurate aviation news even more accessible. Find all these stories and more online today at avweb.com. Comments on this podcast are welcome. Email us at audionews@avweb.com. This report has been made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. For more information, click on the AudioCast sponsors link. Look for AvWeb's next AudioCast on Friday, July 7th. I'm Duffy Fainter. Thanks for listening.